It's Liz Burke here at WFMU with a special episode of the podcast today. I've got a live set of music from Chicago's Ono. That is O-N-O as in onomatopoeia. And the group started in 1980 as a sort of experimental slash performance art collective. And they released a bunch of albums, played a bunch of crazy shows. They sing about topics that have to do with America's spotty racial past and the struggles that have happened racially in America and culturally as well. They've come back in recent years to release a few records on the Moniker label out of Chicago, and their latest album is Spooks, and I think it's just a fantastic slash disturbing slash even bone-chilling look into the mirror here of American culture, especially in light of recent events such as the murder of Michael Brown, et cetera, Sean Bell, et cetera, et cetera. So stay tuned and listen to this great live set. I think it will put some crazy thoughts into your head. It will draw some parallels between recent events and ugly events in America's past. And the conversation afterwards is certainly worth listening to. So without further ado, let's listen to a live set of music from Ono.
Forlorn, I know not. vanity, perchance this dragon's vanity.
Folks believe there's a little heaven down there. Well. Mississippi, 1964. All Hallows Eve, takeaway 9. Spooks Duke, Procol Alarm.
Oxygen, methane, warplanes, rain or shine. Spooks, spooks, do the color line. Congo, come home. Tango, salt dome, door open. Wormhole unplugged. 8,200 Belgian cousins drop by. Water well done dry. Home flooding.
doctor adopted the Tuskegee syphilis experiment. The Tuskegee syphilis experiment.
Illiterate black men in Tuskegee, Alabama received injections. They thought they were receiving free health care from the U.S. government. Tuskegee syphilis intermarry, concealed carry. Thank you.
And so the story goes, they wore the clothes, they said the things to make it seem improbable. The will of a lie like the tomorrow had their feet in the wallow, and their heads of long were nicer shorn. And they bought their positions with saccharine and trust, and the world was asleep. Our latent pearls. Sighing, we were through the street, like the crust of the sun, the newly brothers.
With our wings that bark, our flashing teeth of brass, standing tall in the dark.
Oh, and we were born, hanging out with your throat.
Oh no, thanks for coming to WFMU from Chicago.
Thanks
from
for having us.
The past, the present, the future. It was an amazing set, and I loved every bit of it.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks for having us a second time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, Brian Turner hosted you guys in 2014.
Correct.
Hey, Brian.
And
thank you.
Yeah, that was coming off of yet another comeback album, shall we say. And this latest album that you've put out is entitled Spooks.
Yep.
And it's kind of bone-chilling, it's kind of disturbing, and just sublimely wonderful. It's such a great distillation of, I don't know, my feelings personally towards what's going on in the news and all of that these days. And I'm curious about your inspiration for the album, if it's the past, the present, a specific incident or incidents.
You're correct. It's the past, present, and future, and I suppose the name and some of the artwork was inspired by Samuel Delaney's The Book Dahlgren, which is something Jordan was really into and kind of something that we had read earlier a long time ago but forgot all about, and Jordan kind of reminded us about it. And some of the artwork is based upon that, and Travis did that. And but the words, of course, and the thoughts behind it were always kind of related to Samuel Delaney and that book. It had a big influence on us when we read it back in the 80s, maybe. I think it was the 80s, I think I read it. But never thought about it. Some kind of subliminal. And so there's a lot of, if you've read the book, there's a lot of feeling related to that record.
I think what Michael is referring to is the dystopia mm-hmm. that you sense in Dahlgren, whereas the dystopia that is directly and in real time is very much of my time and our time, in that much of it stems from 1963 to 1969 when I was in the military, as well as issues that seem to be new and or relevant now, but for black folks, for queer folks, for veteran folks, those issues are not at all new. They influence now, they have an impact now on larger numbers of white, suburban, middle class, upper class Americans. And so the idea of spooks is not just a black term. It's very much an American term. I'm Native American and black, and P. Michael is Italian American. We've got Chinese American, Greek American, we've got white American, we've got all of these folks. We are America. So we are singing the song of our America. We are spooks.
And there's tons of overlays and violent overlays on the record. It's probably, a 10-piece band plus guests. And the bands were divided in half, five and five. And each were given headphones. And five people heard one soundtrack, five people heard the other soundtrack, which was an overlay of the first band's, what the first band heard. So it was mixed by Cooper Crane, who's in the band Cave and Mission Bajas, and he took the bands and he would flip back and forth between the two bands. So what you're hearing is a mix of two bands playing the same piece, overlaid simultaneously. Yeah, overlaid. Plus the guest individuals that were on there, which there was Al Jorgensen, there was Hilal Omar Al Jamal, who was an R&B singer. There was anybody else?
Dr. Shannon Rose Riley.
Shannon Rose Riley's not
one
really
of the
a guest.
Original. Yeah, no, not an, a guest, yeah, but yeah, one of the original Ono mm-hmm. members. And she's doing and has done a lot of research in Haiti and in South America, which is relevant to this mm-hmm. at that very same moment. 63 to 69 when I was in the military, and in Cuba and the Dominican Republic, and America was expending a great deal of energy there. Shannon Rose Riley is now looking at that same group and period in terms of philosophies, performance, and the performative aspects of connections between cultures. And there's so much to be said about that that we don't dare talk about in America now. But leave it to Ono. And then, of course, we got folks like Rebecca and Dahwee who are standing here but will not. Come on, you guys. Have another.
And Shannon appeared today via tape. At the very end, she was doing the recitation of Dessalines from a play.
Who has made ye
master here.
Master here.
You can hear that at the very end.
What will make you master?
And Bim from Obnox was there,
right,
too,
yeah.
In the recording.
Yeah, Bim was on the record as well. He was Obnox, and he did a lot of vocals and guitar.
The record's just so amazing and so powerful, and I had no idea that that was actually how you guys recorded it and mixed it. That's kind of an insane process.
And it was truly insane.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, only a genius would have thought of that.
And we didn't know until we got there that
yeah, that's right. They had no clue that the band was being divided. I sat there the night before and tried to say, well, this is going to be a lot of people trying to record, so how are we going to make this work? Yeah.
So were you the mastermind, P. Michael?
Unfortunately, I had to come up. It was more like desperation.
He's the man behind the curtain.
I had to think of a way to make this work because there's a lot of people.
That's true.
So I divided them in half and just gave half a script and the other half a script. And that's the only way I could figure out how to keep some kind of sanity.
That is so great. And the record Spooks is on the Moniker record label, and Jordan Reyes, who was playing guitar in the group today, is actually a rep of Moniker Records. And we've hosted many great acts from the Moniker label here at WFMU, but maybe Jordan can say a little something about, you know, what inspired you guys to connect with Ono in the first place, you know, for the, you know, reunion or resurgence or whatever you guys want to call it, but your comeback from silence for a few years.
Well, Robert started Moniker Records about 5 years ago, and he asked me to be partner with him probably a year and 3 months ago. And I had known Ono, and we actually had discovered the mutual love and interest of Dahlgren through an interview I had done with them for a small blog that I ran at the time. And so we had discovered that we had, you know, similar interests and palette of influence, but Robert had already put out Albino and Diegesis by Ono before, and so I knew that they were recording this double LP, and I knew that they were doing it electrical audio, but I had also moved to Miami last January, and so it was sort of, I guess, something that Robert knew a little more in terms of the transparency of the whole process and knew Ono back then. Of course, it's a complete honor to work with them, and it's been nothing but miraculous since.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that Robert had not heard Spooks before he released it. It was a surprise to him.
That's a nice trick to pull on the record company.
He didn't really know the concept or
just
anything.
Just put this out, trust us.
It was just, yeah, I mean, he heard that, you know, we were having, you know, some of these guest individuals on there and thought that was really cool that we had pulled in some guests and stuff and thought that was a really good idea, but he had never heard it or didn't know what to expect. And it was like, whoa. Because I went into the studio the last Cooper Crane was having some last-minute issues with trying to get it all mixed because it's so dense that I went in to help him because we were behind schedule. I went in and I put the finishing touches on, and then Robert heard it about 2 or 3 days later. Cooper sent it to him, and it was like, whoa, this is really, really...
unwell.
Yeah. I mean, he liked it, but it was just... they didn't expect
unwell.
That. Nobody expected that.
And something I think that it often gets missed or perhaps lost in all this talk is that there are so many people involved, and new people, for instance, who are relatively new to this Ono process, or should I call it P. Michael's process, because I have no clue what is on his mind either. I wait and I'm told what to do and I'm willing to go where he tells me to go. However, there are these folks who are relatively new to Ono, Dawes here in the room, Ben Billington, and Rebecca has been with us for a very long time also, and you rarely hear very much from them, but they are central to the mix because they are willing to go the route that P. Michael will very often dictate at the moment, and so it's not possible to anticipate musically what he wants. And there's a lot to be said for that when you are forming a band, a cohesive band, and that lot does not often get spoken of, and it is important to me. So you guys that are standing there saying nothing, respect your work.
People's process inspires a certain amount of surrender. And I think that's what's so addicting.
Well, yeah, we never really know what's going to happen, and which kind of makes it interesting. It's kind of like walking a tightrope. You don't really know.
What he's actually saying is that P. Michael's a fascist.
Yeah.
And we deal with it.
A benevolent dictator, as we call them here at WFMU.
Well, okay.
Well, not so benevolent.
On certain days.
Well, there also has to be an incredible improvisational chemistry between all of you.
Oh, no.
It's not improv. That's why
it's
I said fascist. It's not improv.
It's coming from your head.
It's from P. Michael's head, and you have to listen on so many levels. I mean, I get real nervous when I think, well, gee, drummers have ideas about beats, but those ideas have really relatively little to do with what's going on in P. Michael's mind. So how do you do, where's the beat you're listening to? Or with a guitar, for instance, when P. Michael wants specific moments, but that seemed to have no real relevance except to maybe a certain phrase at a certain vocal phrase or a certain moment in a song, and you are expected to find that and do that, and so that is why I am forever in the face of the other artists who are playing, wondering, well, gee, how can they be happy with this? How can you ever be happy with this unknowing? Speak
well,
to me, folks.
Well, that's where all the magic is.
We're in it for the free beer sometimes.
Yeah.
You know? Coming in for the free beer. And
yeah, usually folks are amazed at how it comes out, but it doesn't sound that way while it's going in. It sounds really, really chaotic sometimes and strange what's happening live, but when you hear it play back, it says, oh, okay, that kind of does work. You know? It's like, well, how did that happen?
When we recorded that record, we were all in the studio, like, 11 of us or 12 of us, and none of us had any clue what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, we were playing two separate bands, it was like two different bands playing two different songs at once in the mm-hmm. studio, and it was complete chaos. Mm-hmm. And then you hear this record come out, I mean, what came out of that session is like, I mean, it's like magic or something, because I mean, there's no way that I would have ever anticipated the sound of that record coming from the session.
And
like, I don't really understand
Travis's
it.
Travis's voice, yeah. You really don't know who's doing what.
Yeah.
So the cool thing about that is that you get to surrender your sense of ego, because you know, it has nothing to do with you.
Yeah. I believe it's a testament.
It's a spiritual experience.
It's a testament to Cooper Crane's magical
yes.
touch, and I wrote like extensive notes to him on how I wanted certain things to sound, and so did Shannon and I both got together and kind of did associate production with him, and we wrote extensive notes on stuff, and then we would write notes back and forth with him about what to do with the mix. And then finally, at the very end, when he got a little bit stuck on a couple of things about which way to go with something, I just went in there myself, because I refused to stop to be a part of his mixing. I want him to do it and have fun and do what he wants to, and he also plays instruments on there that I don't know about. So sometimes we'll hear the record and we'll say, well, I don't remember hearing anybody playing that, and it's like, ha ha ha, that's Cooper.
Yeah. And as for me, I don't care.
Right, I don't care
because
either.
I don't like music in the first place. So what comes out is this overlay of what is very often my words. And for instance, I've never listened to the last three LPs that have so much of my military experience, my Vietnam and all of that, because it's just so ugly. It is, it's unsettling, and I don't want to go to those places as Travis. When I'm performing, I'm not performing as Travis. I'm performing in the character of the performance, because the performance is always different. It's another experience from the real-time life of a, quote, Travis person. And so being able to create this character around a premise, and all of our performances are based in clearly defined premises, so that character then is then in the sounds that are coming from these various creators in that room, and the words are coming from someone, but that other, that it's the I think yes, the I who is someone else, and that allows me to maintain a certain level of balance. Arthur Rimbaud said, "The I who is someone else," and working that way allows me to get outside myself and do it, and create the process from another experience, and then allow these folks who are working to make it an experience, an entertaining experience, to have their way with words that have been written by another person. I know that's mad and neurotic, but I'm okay with that.
But it's also you do what you want to do. An element of surrender, Michael.
Yeah.
Which is what, you know, we get to experience with working with you.
I'll surrender hell when he's yelling at us. It doesn't seem like surrender, because me and Michael will grab that red.
No, I just know. I
want this. And it's, oh yeah. And the other side of that coin, though, is that there are all these people, and they're musicians, and they have their own bands, they have their own projects. Why would they want to subject themselves to the sheer trauma?
The free beer. We were saying the free beer.
The free beer.
It's because
well, I don't drink.
It's because I know exactly what you can do, and so I just want you to do what I know you can do so well. So I just try to pull it out of you.
I know that
you want to do what you want to do too. So I just want to make sure. And like I say, because things are so thick and dense that sometimes things get lost, so it's just a matter of like each hearing each other, and that's the tricky part.
Let's talk a little bit about a little bit more about your artistic relationship. P. Michael and Travis, you guys have been collaborating for many years. Mm-hmm. You kind of hit the pause button for a while and then reemerged, and what happened there?
School, finishing school, getting a job.
Life gets in the way.
Life got in the way, and Travis went to get his degrees, and I went to get my degrees, and stuff like that. And then I moved out of town, moved to Hawaii, and a couple of places.
World travel.
Life was pretty. Life was always traumatic. I was a Kundalini Sikh before. I was on my way to New Mexico. P. Michael started all of this and said, "We're going to have a band. We're going to do your work." And I said, "No, I don't like music. I'm not at all interested in competing with musicians and artists decadent in Mississippi, where I was born." Well, he said, "We're going to do sonic environments." And I agreed with that and decided to completely turn my life around. And that was January 5th, 1980. And then started studying at Northwestern University. And the fun part was that I could then learn about performance with Dr. Dwight Conkergood and learn about how to create premises and that sort of thing, as well as doing a master's thesis on vernacular architecture. Well, from then at 10 years or so, not even 10 years into that, then suddenly Shannon is in school, I'm in school, P. Michael is in school and performing in California, and Rick is away up in North, and so we were away, but not really retired or out of the scene, because for all of my projects at Northwestern, I did performance. For every school project, I added a performative overlay using P. Michael or Shannon or mm-hmm. folks there. And so we were always doing these other instances, other realisms, if you will. And so we were there, but not there simultaneously. And that was workable until Steve Krakow came, did an interview, as he said, found us again in my house, did an interview on the radio and all this stuff. And then suddenly people wanted to know what we were doing. So it wasn't as if we had stopped. We were doing what we do, and what I think that most folks really do who are as neurotic or close to it as we were at the time, because we are from that generation, I think, where folks, P. Michael, for instance, was studying medicine, then art, and then all, and then I was studying Shannon Rose Riley, who now teaches in California. We're all studying. Where are all those people now? They're doing all sorts of things. They're really not on the grid, but they're also not the disappeared. Who knows? They may reappear as politicians. This would be a great time for that. And our work has always been political, so we expect to see all our friends in the media.
Have recent events politically or just in the news, recent racial tensions in America, have those become points of inspiration, or have you felt compelled to be artistic with Ono because of those things?
Funny thing about that is that what's new is old, is real, real, real
We've
old.
We've been living this all of our lives.
That the pot finally boiled over is no surprise.
That's why Ono was relevant then, and why it more so now, sadly.
Yeah, there is still Driving While Black. There is still some, we deal with it as racial beings in America, very often because we don't have other options. We don't know. We don't know. White people don't know who white people are. Black folks know very little about themselves. They have some sense of what it is that isn't working. But when white people are looking at each other, how are they relating to their past as well as their present? Is it really simply a matter of their color, or is it a look at ideas about elitism? Are they looking at ideas about empire, an empire of an old country versus an old civilization versus a new civilization? For certainly we know about the world that the Americas created in South America, for instance, in the 19th century. We know that much of France and Brussels and all these areas were deeply enmeshed in the lives of the natives of Haiti, for instance, which we talk about on the record. And the idea of France charging Haitians, for instance, reparations after Haiti won the war, and those kinds of things, everybody knows those things, but we have a place we put them. It is to the good, I think, of Ono and all these folks who are willing to listen to Ono, that black and white, and there are more whites that listen to Ono than black folks, because black folks, oddly enough, very often want to be white, whiter than white folks, and can be, because they know you. And so we are that point that we look at America in a mirror and say, ha 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 ha, here we are. What are you going to do with us now? And so folks come to our show and they will give us all sorts of incredible confessions about themselves, their parents, and all of that. And I think that's a good thing, because they can talk. We're a band they can talk to. And the people who are part of the band are also folks who have to deal with their own families, with their own bands, their own projects. Where you're in that band that talks about sodomy, you're in that band that talks about miscegenation, you're in that. Those kinds of things, I think, are important or have a place in contemporary American society.
And if you pay attention to the words that were spoken today, those were the roots of what's going on now.
Well,
syphilis.
Yeah.
All the various presidents that gave us syphilis.
Or didn't stop it.
How many people really know about the Tuskegee experiment?
Or want to forget.
And that's why some people don't go to the doctor.
Answering your question, Fleur de Lis was recorded right after Michael Brown was killed in Ferguson. And so for me, that was like gestalt therapy, to be able to just get that out, because it was just so horrific. So it was a direct, definitely.
Yeah.
Direct relationship.
I'm glad you said that, because, Travis was talking about conversations, and this is inspiring people to have conversations about, these ugly things that have happened or are happening in our society here, especially in America at the moment. But I think last year and earlier this year, those conversations were like almost starting to happen in the mainstream media, like after two incidents, like Beyonce at the Super Bowl and Kendrick Lamar's performance. I was wondering what your thoughts were about that. I mean, obviously, you guys go much deeper into these
Lamar,
issues,
but that was something else.
Yeah,
I respect them for endangering their mortgages.
There you go. It's about the money.
Because I'm well aware that a lot of folks, white folks and black folks, screamed at the networks about, oh, how offensive this is. This is not entertainment. Well, every day I am entertained in my black neighborhood down on the south side of Chicago, and I go to funerals and I watch what is happening there, and I listen, and I am well aware also that preachers, black preachers, are just as invested in black youth dying as are some white groups.
Oof.
Ooh, suddenly Oof. Everything got quiet.
All right, well, let's we'll drop the mic on that one for a moment. Let's talk
about it is for posterity.
I know. Well,
perpetuity.
Perpetuity.
I think the conversation thing is really important, and I think that's why Spooks just stood out to me, is because it just seemed like the perfect reaction to everything that was going on that was, ugly, and that you just, felt bad about in your gut. Over the past few years, and then, drawing the parallels between, incidents that were similar, scarily so, in American history. I just think you guys boiled it down better than anybody else could. Better than Beyonce, better than Kendrick Lamar.
Well, thank
Lamar.
You, but we thank have you. Written those things many, many years ago, and there
They're
are
old.
Hundreds more where those came from. And the idea that we would, I, for instance, haven't watched television in 8 years, and there's very good reason for that. But the thought that there is this this undercurrent that you hear in Spooks, this tragedy. There is, what I noticed in today's recording is that there's this really, really supreme rumble that is happening, undercurrent that was unplanned, and that reminds me very much of what you're saying. Here's this, there is a certain anxiety that underpins so much of our conversation, so much of what we do or don't do and what we say and don't say. It's like that unspoken rumble that is in the room, and we don't really approach it until something ugly happens. Well, in my neighborhood, something ugly happens every couple of days. So I've been writing these all along, and I'm a Vietnam veteran. So when I'm up there on the stage wearing full-length frocks and all of that, it's not just because I'm trying to excite your sensibilities. It's also that I'm identifying with a lot of groups, a lot of things that are going on in the character that is being presented, including issues, LGBTQ issues and the like. I was vice president treasurer of American Veterans for Equal Rights for 10 years, Chicago chapter, and the issues of veterans, for instance, lot of issues that are never approached, especially trans people and trans people that are dying continuously, and we don't look at those issues. Well, those issues come up suddenly when you see this old black man on the stage talking in a long dress talking about sodomy and syphilis and all of that. And we need to think about those things, because we can't expect that the medical industry and that the pharmaceutical industry is going to be better by us if we don't require it and demand it of them.
Yep, they need to sell the pills to cure those diseases.
Do I hear? Dawe, you're over there in the corner. Talk to me. What's happening? Speak. She's friendly.
Let me see. I'm just trying to think of what to say. Well, I think, I mean, I think our sound in Ono is kind of, you can say it's kind of representational of like our different cultural backgrounds, and you could mention ethnic backgrounds, but definitely our cultural and political backgrounds, how it's sort of just a diverse like melange or a mixture of different influences and experiences. We basically just sort of, P. Michael's kind of like the Andy Warhol of the group, where he just basically points his finger and selects different elements to sort of throw in like a big salad. And basically he just sort of, selects certain sounds or certain unique sounds from different members that he knows that member will specialize in, and sort of allows like sort of a framed creativity, you know, and it becomes, yeah, kind of like a salad. So, I mean, in some ways it's kind of like a metaphor. Our sound is sort of like a metaphor for like the different backgrounds
gumbo.
And experiences. And
and oh,
then you can say we're just like America.
America in a blender, I call you earlier.
There you go, America in a blender. America in a blender.
Yeah, in all kinds of ways. Yeah.
Or as Mark Master said, the abattoir. the blender grinder. The abattoir. Meat grinder.
What other creative projects are you guys involved with? I should have done this earlier, but Travis was on vocals, P. Michael on beats, electronics, bass, yep. Dawe on guitar, Rebecca on keyboards, Ben on drums, and Jordan on guitar. But what other projects do you guys have going on artistically right now?
Ben.
Hi, I have lots of things going on. I have a band called Tiger Hatchery. It's like a free jazz, sort of harsh free jazz band. I do a solo thing called Quick Sales. It's like another salad of sorts, but mostly electronic based. I play in a bunch of improvisational projects in Chicago, a lot of free jazz.
ADT.
A band ADT. Called ADT that plays
a lot these days.
We're doing the whole 70s Chick Corea Miles Davis through a blender vibe. I don't know. And then Ono's been a big priority for me for the last few years. They were one of my favorite bands of all time, if not still my favorite band of all time, that I got to play shows with and share bills with and then go see, you know, all the time in Chicago, and then all of a sudden I'm playing drums with them, so it's an honor.
Right now my most active project is like a solo industrial thing that's actually rooted in like Gregorian chants. I use a vocal looping pedal to create a backing track for me, so it's usually like some sort of melody, like medieval-ish, and then a heavy bass, and then, you know, something on top, and then either I'm, you know, yelling or singing on top of that. There's this video of it. It was called Man in Black Yelling. My project is Taffophile, but I think Man in Black Yelling, because I was wearing all black.
With a cowboy hat.
Yeah, with a cowboy hat, which was sort of my signature thing in Chicago until I shaved my head. It was really cowboying it up. So maybe it should be Man in Black Yelling, I think.
In cowboy hat.
Yeah, in cowboy hat. And then... yeah, I've always sort of had a love for literature and reading, which is how I sort of bonded with the members of Ono. Yeah. And so I write a lot, and that's sort of why I make songs, is like you can sometimes tell a story a lot quicker in a song than, like, you know, writing out and like giving yourself all the headache of mapping out a novel or something. And then you can release it, and like all truly great artistic things, it's it can be quite the exorcism.
So I don't do anything else musically. This is it. Period. That's all I need. I can't deal with more musicians.
Oh, no, it's keeping you busy that way.
My life is sad enough. I can't do anything else.
Yeah, I got some TV to watch.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I'm doing. I'm
trying to keep up with Broad City, you know?
I am retired, and I'm Travis. Retirement is weird. Suddenly, everybody thinks that tomorrow you're dead. In every day in the mail, they want to know about, have you filled out your beneficiaries form, and blah, 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 blah. Well, here I am, 70 years old, and I've never been to a hospital in my life. I'm hoping if I ever go, I just die there quickly. But in the meantime, I have to make each day work. So when I retired, I bought $5,000 worth of Apple equipment, and I think that Apple should give all senior citizens $5,000 for everything. And I'm having more fun than ever because I can do all these wonderful projects. Right now I'm working on a set of drawings that illustrates Russell Atkins' book. Russell Atkins, the poet from Cleveland, Ohio, 90 years old, on February 25th this year, and he was the man in Cleveland when I got out of Vietnam, went back to University of Akron, then went to Cleveland studying martial arts and various other things. Then I started performing at Russell Atkins' workshop at Caramoo House in Cleveland. He, at that time, was already published, considered the most avant-garde artist in the black community, and his work was performed in German avant-garde circles, and had been since the 50s, his music, his poetry, and it's pretty extreme. Well, the book he was working on in 1976 when I was there was Here in the, which I prefer to say, Here in the, and it's a book of poems. I published online 8 of those with drawings, illustrated, if you will, on February 25th, his birthday, and decided now that I am going to illustrate the entire book in black and white drawings, and I'm halfway there now. And other than that, I am also illustrating chapters of Delaney's Dahlgren, which once Jordan got me back into thinking about how it relates to what Ono does in terms of its environment and environmentalism, I'm completely entrapped in it, and so I'm illustrate, drawing, creating these. I've got 150 so far. The book is almost 900 pages, and I've read it twice, working on a third time, and it doesn't make any more sense now than it ever did. But I'm in the middle of that kind of thing, and I paint every day as well.
Can I say a little bit about Dahlgren?
Absolutely.
Cool. Dahlgren's my favorite book of all time, and I think it's been obviously heavily influential on Ono. When I was in college, I had this amazing professor, Fred Moten, who was heavily invested in Black radical history, and he gave me a really amazing semester, the only class I never skipped, actually. And Dahlgren was the second book that we read, and Dahlgren's about a nameless protagonist, even if you can call it a protagonist, really, who ventures into this city. It's loosely based off of 70s Detroit. There's been this unexplained event horizon that's happened there, and the protagonist, who goes by the Kid, is sort of wrapped in these chains of lenses and prisms, and the idea of the conduit, almost shamanic living, comes through this character. And so he has a lot of sort of unexplained things happening, and there's this like loosely veiled idea of like dyslexia. How do you communicate with something when the world doesn't make sense to you? And so the Kid loses memory at times, he regains it at others. He remembers some very, very lucid experiences in his history. He doesn't remember others. He looks much younger than he is. He knows he's part Native American. And so he has this really sort of puzzling identity that changes during the course of the book quite a bit. He becomes this sort of savior or messiah, and he comes across other saviors and other messiahs. But the whole thing just totally changed how I thought about sexuality, what I thought about race, what I thought about what it means to be American and a cosmic American when you're in a place where even the cosmology itself doesn't make any sense. And every time I finish a book, to this day, I wonder, well, should I go buy another book or should I just read Dahlgren again? Because honestly, that's about as good as it gets.
Even the New York Times agrees with you.
So yeah. It must be right.
Recently. I've read it about 3 or 4 times. Yeah. So.
It is great. It has an impact on the way that some of the premises in Ono shows are presented, because there is this whole idea of time and the retranslating of time and how that can change from song to song, and how a person, an artist, can inspire or influence your ideas about time, your ideas about sonic logic and rationale. And so that is what keeps appealing to me about Dahlgren every time I read it. And I think about Ono and how that does, how that works with our presentations as well.
Do you think you age slower when you're performing? Because you experience time slower.
There's
you
no
might have
Travis.
Something there.
There's no Travis. Travis is already dead and buried.
Just light conversations with Ono.
Yeah, I read 2 or 3 pages every night in front of 2.5 men on television in the kitchen.
And then he has terrible nightmares.
I do.
Ashton Kutcher and Dahlgren, like, mashup.
Is that coming on the next album?
That's so harsh.
Oh, yeah.
What is next for Ono?
Only P. Michael knows for sure.
Well, the next album's going to be interesting.
I'd love to see Ono score a film.
Oh, yeah, we can do that. That could be easily done.
Your question was, what other projects do we work on?
Yeah.
I primarily work on Ono because it's very fulfilling, and my primary interest is in scoring things, mm-hmm. which is why it keeps me interested. So that I'll do little projects here and there that have to do with scoring mm-hmm. in some way. But that's what I would love to see for Ono
sure.
next, because I think there's just...
We could do a Dahlgren score.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That would be really cool.
Oh, and Samuel Delaney is still alive.
Yeah,
do a score to his drawings.
And to Russell Atkins' drawings.
Yeah, that too.
We get them both engaged. Mm-hmm.
Do you have their number?
I know. Anybody out there? Can, oh, yeah, man. Let us know, okay? Let's hook Ono up.
Yeah, if you got a film that you want, let us know.
Yeah. Wow. Russell Atkins and Delaney.
Mr. Delaney.
You guys listening out there? I know you like weird music on WFMU.
I mean, you can use the stuff we just did as a starting point.
Yeah.
Yeah, truly. Wow. Cool. Okay, so we've already planned out your next album. Is that perfect? Our work here is done.
We should be back in Chicago by Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then are you going to be playing any shows in Chicago or
we do have one show on the 15th of April, which should be interesting, at a little DIY house. But I'm going to probably be away for a little bit, just chilling till later in the summer. Maybe we'll go back out on tour again.
And I'll be making... I'm sorry.
Where's the 15th show?
It's at Mr. Rogers' neighborhood.
Yes. and in the meantime, I'm going to be working on two films, in one of which I am going to rescue a woman in Lake Michigan. So I have to go start leaping into Lake Michigan, swimming again.
Jeez. Be careful.
It's crazy. Really.
Take some antibiotics.
That's going to be cover my body in plastic. You guys, what are you up to? Quick sales?
ADT?
ADT's recording real soon. Big. Quick Sales has a new record coming out this year at some point on Haosu Mountain.
Oh, yeah. It's cool. Good deal.
Tiger Hatchery has just had a record come out and got another one in the can.
Good.
Nonstop.
There you go.
And Dr. Shannon Rose Riley is out in California, and she is teaching and will be joining Ono for some vocal experiments. Via email and Apple and all of those here and there across country during the same period. So who knows what's going to happen when there are so many people doing so many things. So that's where we are.
Is there anything else you guys want to mention that we didn't talk about already that's important to let the radio audience know? Anything about Ono or...
Our website.
Oh, yes. Go.
www.ono1980.com.
Yes, ono1980.com. Ono as in onomatopoeia, O-N-O, the year we formed, 1980.com. Ono1980.com.
Well, if there's nothing else, I want to thank you once again for coming to WFMU, for making the trip, for doing such a powerful performance, and for having this conversation with me today.
Thank you for asking the questions that we will have to answer in every show for the next few weeks. And thank you, Brian. Thank you, Brian, wherever
Turner.
You are.
Thank you to Mario for engineering this episode.
Mario is God.
All right, you guys, safe travels.
Thank you.
Thank you.